Hello everyone, hello football fans around the world. Welcome to the Squawker Talker. Today we're talking about the Europa League, the Premier League, which is coming up again, a little bit of focus on the Champions League games, which happened earlier in the week. I am joined today, delightfully, by the sensational Squawker Dave. Hello, Dave.
Thanks, Nick. Sensational, that's a bit too much, mate. That's a bit of pressure.
Is it too much?
Yeah, too much, mate.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I feel like I've got to leave now.
I'm sorry, I can't even compliment you, right? Also joining us is James McManus. Hello, James.
See, I didn't get a compliment because you kicked up a fuss.
Yeah, this is what happens.
Sorry, right, mate.
Also joining us is Natasha Henry. Hello, Natasha.
I really need a compliment.
Okay.
Sensational.
See how you get on, and then we'll get to it.
Oh, okay.
We'll get to it.
I like that.
Fantastic.
Challenge.
Let's kick off with the Europa League. Feyenoord 1, Manchester United 0. Dave, I mean, this is a little bit embarrassing for Mourinho, isn't it? I mean, he said he wasn't particularly interested in the Europa League, neither of the players. It's not a competition Man United should be in, but you'd expect a Jose Mourinho side that spent that much money, even if he is playing a sort of second string side, to kind of put away a team like Feyenoord, right?
I don't think it was a second string side, right, really. You know, De Gea, same two centre-backs, Paul Pogba in midfield. You know, Zlatan came on. They started with Rashford and Martial. I don't think it's embarrassing. It's just more of a tactical error for Mourinho on how he set up for both games this week. You know, the City game, he pressed too much and was far too open. And then at Feyenoord, they sat back and looked to plan the counter-attack, which was the wrong approach in both games. It should have been the other way around. They should have pressed Feyenoord. They should have got him their rhythm. They should have tried to, you know, be a bit more aggressive there. And they should have sat off against Manchester City. So, yeah, Mourinho made two big mistakes this week. But in terms of, you know, United, the squad, there's still a lot of quality that it lacks. Mourinho's still sort of stumbling on who is the players that he wants to play. You know, he did bring on Memphis Depay and Ashley Young last night, and they were both awful. Absolutely awful. No impact on the game. Potentially could have changed the system, moved Ibrahimovic up front with Rashford. Rashford, for me, isn't a target man yet. And if you're playing a 4-3-3 like Mourinho and United did yesterday on the counter-attack, you need a target. And Rashford couldn't hold the ball. And it was a bit of an issue. Martial looked bright for me as well. And I was surprised when he was brought off because he looked like he was getting into his flow. He's taking people on, especially in the first half. Maybe not the second half. He might have dropped off a bit. But give him the ball and give him time. I think that's the problem with United. They're too Louis van Gaal-esque still.
Still stuck in the
still
Van Gaal. Natasha, Rashford got a rough time from the Feyenoord centre-backs. But, I mean, there's a bit of an issue with Mourinho in, like, he seems to have lost his air of invincibility almost, and his teams look beatable, which isn't something you'd normally associate with a Mourinho side.
Or with Man United, I do think they've lost that aura that we all kind of grew up with. You'd go to Old Trafford and you wouldn't expect to win. If you got a point, you were happy. If you didn't concede two goals, you were happy. I think the problem with Mourinho is the way he's talking about the Europa League. I remember when Arsene Wenger used to say that about the League Cup and the absolute grief and abuse he got. If you're in a competition, you have to be in it to win it. Mourinho likes to have a small squad. We all know that Europa League adds so much pressure. So it's unrealistic for Man U to be in the Europa League and actually get anywhere because he likes this really compact squad. Mm. I just think he doesn't want to be there. As soon as they're out of there, he'll actually be happier.
Mm. James, I mean, Feyenoord, let's give them credit. They actually look quite tidy. I mean, they've won all of their games, got 100% league record in Eredivisie. They've only conceded two goals, three clean sheets for Brad Jones there, unbelievably. Some Liverpool fans might think. Dirk Kuyt is sort of playing a false six role, roaming around midfield. Van Bronckhorst has got a good little side on his team, and they really made it difficult for United, didn't they?
Yeah, I think Feyenoord played well, but as Dave said, Man United didn't help themselves. Everyone was saying before the game, this is the midfield they should have signed the Manchester derby with, Schneiderlin, Herrera, Pogba.
Mm.
And it didn't really work, did it? I think the fact that Mourinho's made five changes at half-time in his last two games is he's already called out his players, called out Mkhitaryan and Lingard after the City game. He put a bit of pressure on Rashford before the game last night, saying, oh, he's playing as a number nine.
Mm.
I think he's lost. We say he's lost his aura of invincibility. I think he's too aggressive with players now. The siege mentality, it just includes him now.
Mm.
It's protecting the image of Mourinho. He's become a brand in his own right.
Mm.
So he takes no prisoners. So he used to create a siege mentality at Chelsea, Inter, Real Madrid, where everyone couldn't get in and he would protect his players. Now he sort of hangs them out to dry quite a bit more than he used to.
And so early in the season as well.
Yeah, I don't think it creates a great sort of mood in the camp already.
And it seems to have an effect on some of the players. I mean, Marcos Rojo yesterday turned in a diabolical performance at left back.
Diabolical. I
mean, diabolical. Like in Alan Hansen's, the scale of Alan Hansen defending. Suicidal. 7 misplaced passes, 0 tackles won, 0 aerial duels, 0 clearances. Dave, it was pretty abject from Rojo. And also, Juan Mata looked totally lost out on the right wing, didn't he?
Unfortunately, you can't see my face right now.
I was thinking the same thing. We could really do with a camera.
Unfortunately, I can't.
Thunder. Marcus Rojo, I don't understand why he's at Manchester United. We should have sold him 2 seasons ago. He's absolutely useless.
Didn't you only sign him 2 seasons ago?
Oh, you shouldn't have. Straight away. Back in the pot. See you later, Marcus. Back to Sporting. See you later, mate. But in terms of his performance, he was absolutely atrocious. Couldn't do anything. Was so lost positionally. Was interesting the positions he was taking up. He was playing like a Pep Guardiola role where he just gets a free role left back where he's coming inside when he doesn't need to be inside. He's ahead of Martial. Ahead of Memphis Depay when he's playing left back. It's the goal as well just sums it up. He goes to make a challenge in the opposition's half, ahead of his central midfielders, to try and win the ball back. He doesn't win the tackle, and then they go down the left and they score a goal. It's so simple, that goal. You look at Smalling, he gets pulled over, simple through ball, striker goes wide, pull back, midfielder comes in. So simple as well. Our defensive midfielder, Morgenstern, had a brilliant first half. His stats in the first half were incredible. 100% of his passes completed. Won 2 of his 3 tackles, 3 interceptions.
All second of his half, headers
he just dropped off. He really dropped off. He made 1 interception in the second half, failed to make a tackle, even make a tackle. He's playing defensive midfield. And that is the problem with the level of some of these players. And Herrera is another one. You know, he shouldn't get away from the criticism. He was rubbish. In the final third, if you look at his pass map, it's ridiculous. It paints such a picture of Louis van Gaal's Man United. Every time he's hitting the final third, it's either square or it's backward. He failed to complete a pass inside to the area with players like Rashford, Martial, even Ibrahimovic. That's simple. That's a simple task to complete a single pass as a central midfielder that's playing as a, you know, that's playing ahead of one other central midfielder. That's just, it's crazy. And that's why Pogba's not playing very well, because they're not finding him in the right areas. He's not getting into the right areas because he's having to come deep and try and, you know, he's trying to play the passes to himself in a way where he's like, who's making that move inside to the number 10 slot? It's all wrong.
I remember before the World Cup, Rojo was marked out as the weak link in Argentina's entire squad, let alone his starting 11. And then he had a pretty decent tournament, didn't he?
Mm.
And Man United signed him off the back of that. But it was 7 games Man United signed him off the back of. He's never looked comfortable in any role he's played for Man United under 2 different managers now.
Mm.
I do agree with what Dave said a bit on Pogba. I think I was worried about this when he signed for Man United. We're judging a centre midfielder ostensibly on goals and assists, and he is very good at that, but he's a centre midfielder. He's not going to do that every single game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you spend 80 million on Ronaldo and Bale, and with a huge fee on Neymar, you know what you're getting every game. There's value on the score sheet every game. But Pogba, I think, has been playing reasonably well, but opposition fans are so willing to just have a go at him after every game.
Like, and,
he wasn't
and
great
United
in the Manchester
fans.
Derby. Yeah, true. He wasn't great in the Manchester Derby, but no one was, really.
Mm.
And he's been moved about in various systems and formations, told to do different things by a manager that's still getting to learn his game as well. So I'm a bit worried the criticism's a bit much this early on. He wouldn't get this anywhere else, I don't think.
Yeah. An interesting point. Let's go over to the other Premier League club that was playing in Europa League yesterday, Southampton, who managed to record their first win under Claude Puel. That was a long time coming. Southampton have been playing pretty well so far this season. Puel's brought in a 4-4-2 diamond with Oriol Romeu at the base of it, who looks quite impressive. Big Charlie Austin doing the business, James. Chunky Charlie Austin,
I was watching the game last night, and I kind of forgot he played for him.
And then
Jay Rodriguez scored, and I was like, I kind of forgot he played for him as well. And that was set up by Shane Long, who I remembered played for him. But that was about the only one. But they're all attackers that like found their feet in the Championship, had one breakout season, and then just sort of end up at Southampton. Danny Ings is nailed on for Southampton if he doesn't have a good season at Liverpool. But they're right. They've been playing pretty well. I'd in our predictions pre-season ones in the office, I had Southampton as my dark horses. And it sounds strange saying like a team finished 8th as your dark horses, but it's only because they get written off every season. But they didn't really have that major departure this summer. And
the well-run club.
They are. And I still think they've probably got quite a bit of money kept back if they want to make any moves in January. The net spend in the summer compared to what you get in from the TV deal wasn't huge.
Natasha, the probably the key stat for Southampton is they managed to keep their first clean sheet of the season. Limited Prague to just 3 chances created. Virgil van Dijk was hoofing anything that moved into like oblivion. He made 8 clearances in the first half. How important is that going to be to Southampton in terms of creating a base for Puel to actually work with and use attackers like Long, like Austin, like the forgotten Jay Rodriguez?
I think it's really important because so far this season, it's felt like they're playing well, but they just haven't been getting themselves over the line. Mm. Even Arsenal were lucky to beat them the other day. And then obviously you've got the font going to Man United or going to Arsenal rumours. And I think now the transfer window's closed, it's okay, we've got a great keeper in Forster. We've got our spine. We've got our defence. Right, now we can work from the back forward. And it feels like you were saying, Rodriguez, now Austin is fit. You know, he has got ligaments in his knee, apparently.
he found them.
He Rumors. Found them, yeah. Allegedly. Allegedly. And Long, who can be great, but then can be frustrated. Frustrating at the same time. So I think if those three, you know, if they get 15 goals a season each, then... like you said, there could be a dark horse, definitely for a cup run.
Pierre-Emile Højbjerg's a fantastic signing as well. Went a bit under the radar, that. It's about 12 million from Bayern.
Mm. Great.
He's not going to be at Southampton forever. I think they should enjoy him while they got him. He's intelligent, technically pretty sound, forward-thinking as well. He's everything they wanted Jordi Clasie to be last season, but kind of wasn't.
Final point on the Europa League. Huge shout-out to Dundalk, who drew with AZ Alkmaar yesterday, and as such received more prize money than they did just for that draw than they did for winning the League of Ireland last year, €120,000. As an aside, I saw this morning, the CEO of the League of Ireland earns €360,000 a year. So I think that's a way of identifying what the issue is with Irish football on a consistent basis, isn't it, James?
Absolutely. I saw another funny prize money thing on Twitter the other night. Anderson Talisca on loan from Benfica at Beşiktaş. Mm-hmm. Benfica got a £2 million loan fee for him this summer when he moved. And he scored a 93rd minute equaliser for Beşiktaş against him in the Champions League and cost Benfica £1 million in prize money.
It was a very good free kick as well.
Very good free kick. So they've basically just earned £1 million off that deal now. So
well done to Lisker. Yeah. By performing well, he's
paying for himself, right?
Yeah, exactly. He's doing himself very, very well there. Let's look ahead to the Premier League and, Friday Premier League action, probably the biggest Friday League game so far. Chelsea versus Liverpool. All very excited about that. I'm still not quite pro. Woo! I'm still not quite processed the fact that there's going to be a game tonight.
Yeah, me neither.
Friday's a football-free zone in my eyes. But anyway, Klopp versus Conte. A lot of the media obsession has been about a bit about their personalities. Klopp's a big personality. Conte's a big personality. But Natasha, these are two of the most tactically strong managers in Europe, aren't they?
Well, I'm going to be a girl and talk about their clothes and say which one of them is going to split their trousers first.
Okay.
Because they're both obsessed with jumping up and down, and Conte's very Italian, they're very slim fitting. Mm. But no, I agree with you.
Well, Conte wears suits and Klopp tends to go for the tracksuit, so my money would be on Conte. It's a more delicate fabric.
I know, but Klopp looks like he'll do some gymnastics on the side of the pitch. He's always picking people up. But yeah, tactically, I think Klopp, whoever he plays in midfield, or up front, has to kind of say, just stick to David Luiz like flies on poo. Mm. Because he is an accident waiting to happen. He has these games where you think, okay, he's going to be a decent defender, but 8 times out of 10, you're expecting him to give away a penalty or make a foul on the edge of the box. But I think it's going to be interesting because although, yeah, they've been getting the wins, I don't think either team is as good as their places in the table right now. Mm-hmm. So it'd be interesting to see now they've come up against each other, who comes out on top.
James, Klopp's been quite wise in terms of going, right, I haven't got the strongest defence, I haven't got the strongest midfield. Let's build this team around having, you know, a ridiculous attack, around getting the best out of Firmino, Mane, you know, Sturridge, Coutinho when he comes on. How effective can they be against a side which is managed by Antonio Conte, who is amazing at deploying game plans to nullify attacks?
I'll make a prediction for tonight. I think Liverpool are going to take it 2-1 tonight.
All right.
And I'll give you my reason why. Because Chelsea have had a fairly easy start, fixture-wise.
True.
Whereas
True.
Liverpool had Arsenal away first start, have had Tottenham away already. And the game plans for Tottenham and Arsenal in themselves were very different.
Mm.
But the midfield is chaos. They bring the chaos factor. It's full of running. He stumbled on... Also, Sturridge has come into the mix. He's created a system where there's no one player who's guaranteed a place. Coutinho might not even make the 11 tonight, because he missed the Leicester game, because Sturridge came in and did so well. And I've never seen Sturridge and Firmino link up that well before. So I think Liverpool, I mean, Natasha said they don't deserve their place in the table. I think the Burnley game was a one-off.
That's a bit of a bum note, given their attacking performances
so far.
Yeah,
but I think when they beat Arsenal, I think both teams were bad.
Oh, they were both trying their best to lose it.
Yeah, and it was just a case that Arsenal were more stupid than Liverpool. So, you know, they scored less goals. It could easily have been a 6-6 draw, and it would have been no surprise.
Yeah. David, Diego Costa. Let's talk about him. He's a very interesting striker. He always gets the headlines for, you know, his antics, and, you know, he's always
his gamesmanship.
His gamesmanship is exactly the word I'm looking for. But he's a clever striker, isn't he?
Yeah.
And there's a reason Conte's backed him so much and is getting the best out of him. He's a clever striker and works well within a system, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I think that he's going to cause Liverpool a lot of problems, especially, you know, in the left fullback. No, sorry, the right fullback area, the left channel for Diego Costa. That's what he loves. He loves drifting into that zone. So if he can combine with Hazard there, obviously Hazard started the season relatively well.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good early doors. Didn't have the best game against Swansea, but it's so close to exploding again, Eden Hazard. And again, last season, the only game he showed up for was against Liverpool, where he scored that wonderful goal, one of the goals of the season. So I think with Costa pulling wide, Hazard coming into that space could be a good option for Chelsea, on the counter-attack. But I do think it's the Luiz factor is quite interesting. For me, Luiz isn't a centre-back in a 4-4-2. He's a centre-back in a 3-5-2. Is Conte going to try that? Because that's how I'd play Liverpool if I was a manager, because of the runners. You're going to have more... You need more centre-backs in there to deal with those runners if you want to play a sort of zonal system there. And I think with Luiz, you can let him step out. You can let him do what he wants if you've got two other defenders that can cover back.
Could you play which two defenders then?
I think this is the problem. You know, if
Liverpool have a shortage of quality centre-backs.
Not Chelsea, you mean?
Chelsea, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. So it would be
Liverpool
Zuma.
Liverpool do have a shortage.
Yeah. They all have. Yeah. Now, I think it would be... I think Zuma, Luiz, and then one of Cahill and Terry would work in terms of Cahill or Terry would sit in the middle, and then Luiz would be on one side, probably the left, and then
Terry's out.
Terry's out, so it would be Cahill, and Zuma's out, obviously.
Yeah.
So potentially this back three idea is not going to work at all.
Or Aspilicueta, who will just play anywhere.
True, yeah. Aspilicueta could be quite an interesting option,
it's
sort of playing that ball.
Because he's got 2 feet, which makes a nice change for a footballer.
Yeah.
The rest of them don't have 2 feet.
2 feet they can use. Yeah, I realise how that sounds.
I'm being pedantic. Terrible.
Okay, that idea is done anyway.
Terrible.
We'll move on. Nick, to you, mate. Over to you, buddy.
Okay, let's talk about Hull versus Arsenal, because this has banana skin written all over it for Hull, obviously.
It so does.
After the PSG game, which probably needs to talk a little bit about, Koscielny said that Arsenal need to stop starting slowly, which seems to be a real symptom of Arsenal's
play. They
didn't
get started against PSG, Nick.
They never did get started. At least the centre-backs didn't. The new signing's still gelling, James. It's a poor performance, but obviously a decent result versus PSG.
We have a
versus
PhD.
A doctorate. How do they avoid the same problems again? Because Hull look like a decent unit. Mike Phelan's getting some good performances out of a very, very, very small squad, let's face it.
I mean, it's all Arsene Wenger's fault, isn't it, essentially? I mean, you do your business really late in the window, you are going to gel players in the middle of the season. And if they start slowly every season, that's a fault with the pre-season, is it not? Like, David Moyes was well known at Everton for his team starting very slowly and then they'd finish really well. Rafa was kind of the same at Liverpool. So that's because of he's punishing his players in pre-season too much. Maybe Wenger's not putting them through enough hard work during pre-season. They're just turning up first game of the season. Opening game of the season record for Arsenal recently is very poor because they're just underprepared. It's like when England Test cricket team, they go out and they have like two touring games before a test series. They look very underprepared the first test. People need practice to get good at their job, especially if you've had a long break. So, yeah. I mean, Lucas Perez, I haven't seen an awful lot of him. Mustafi looked pretty suspect against PSG, but this is a result of not knowing your targets and not securing your prime targets and having to move around.
Dave, I mean, when Wenger announced his lineup on the Wednesday, everyone just went, huh? Because a lot of Arsenal fans have been saying, God, look at our starting 11. Like, this looks like a decent team. And I don't think anybody has any idea what Wenger's going to start.
Yeah.
You know, what's his 11 going to be?
I think that's the problem, right? Your central midfield pairing is where any football team is built on the centre-backs and the central midfielders. Mm-hmm. And with Arsenal, there needs to be a number one and number two choice centre-back pairing. For me, centre-back, sorry, centre-up, central midfield. Where are we going now?
Central midfield.
Where are we going on the pitch, guys? So I think you know, Coquelin was exposed. Coquelin is not good enough for Arsenal. Sorry,
don't start me on him.
He's not good enough. Yeah.
Police officer.
He could do a job in a big game. You put him at defensive midfield to give you some more coverage. But in terms of him on the ball and him getting into the opposition's penalty area, clueless, unfortunately. And that's the problem. That's why Granit Xhaka is a massive upgrade, because he is a better ball player. He can dictate the play. If you've got Cazorla in there and Xhaka, that's a good pairing for me. That's quite a nice little combination. But I think what PSG did to Arsenal was they just bullied him. Bullied Arsenal, really, really physically bullied them. They played, four central midfielders, which worked out. How many teams have done that to Arsenal in the past and got results? Still the same weaknesses and still the same problem. And Olivier Giroud, for all of his, bad things he does...
He would have been perfect for that game.
He needs to be in that side, because without him, they don't have a focal point.
A distraction.
The amount of times I was screaming, someone get in the box. And then I looked up and Coquelin was in the box. That was the only Arsenal player in the box. I mean, what's he going to do? He's like Ashley Cole. He never scores.
I think, that was the issue with Arsenal. They were playing like they were playing with Giroud. They were getting the ball wide. They were overlapping with their fullbacks. And then they were crossing to, again, there was no one in there.
Alexis Sanchez facing Thiago Silva, which is obviously not the matchup that you want. James, let's throw a little bit of love Hull's way, especially Mike Phelan's way. Curtis Davies and Robert Snodgrass have been excellent and Hull are not just getting results, they're playing well, which is not what anybody expected given the disaster zone, which is the boardroom affair and the state of their squad.
Yeah, they've been a bit of a shambles. It's very surprising that they've done so well at the start of the season. On deadline day, Mike Phelan basically just signed every player Man United didn't want, or as he's previously worked with, or that David Moyes had already signed and didn't want as well. So it was a Moyes versus Phelan off.
What a treat.
Yeah, that's a boxing match we all want to see. They have been doing very well. Curtis Davis probably deserves maybe mentioning for England at some point. We're hardly overburdened with quality centre-back options. John Stones...
Cahill.
Smalling.
Get your point.
Rooney. We're not singing on air again. That was too close to a barbershop quartet. That was. They have been very good. I still think they'll go down though. You did ask me to show them some love, but
you've just assassinated them.
See, do you know what? I don't think they'll go down because I think they'll be like Palace were last season, where they'll do well enough in the first half of the season to keep themselves just floating above relegation come after Christmas. Yeah. I think they'll pick up the points. Wouldn't surprise me if they do beat Arsenal, because they're at home. The fans are clearly loving them right now. And they'll get that. As long as the owner's not there, then the fans will just be booing him, you know, which could be a problem.
Let's talk about City. No Aguero, no problem in the league. But with Aguero, my word, Man City look like one of the top teams in Europe, don't they, Dave? I mean, Kelechi Iheanacho is a very, very impressive young talent, and he's probably going to score quite a few goals in the league, especially if Aguero picks up his customary 15-game injury. but against Mönchengladbach, I mean, they were irresistible. And we even got a late cameo for Ilkay Gundogan, who also looked fantastic as soon as he came on. Guardiola's building something here. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah, the thing with Gundogan is sort of quite like what they were doing before with Silva and De Bruyne. So bringing Gundogan in, he's a different player, he's a quality player, but it is a different option to David Silva. I suppose that's good in terms of they can play different players in that system at different times, which is a positive thing. But it might break up their flow a little bit in the Premier League, potentially. I don't imagine Gundogan will start. You know, why would you play a player that's been out for, you know, pretty much five seasons? Not really been fit for any of those seasons, in and out.
Silva is a doubt, though, for the game.
Silver, so he could be thrown in there, which could work, could not work. But City looked really, really good. Sterling looks like a breath of fresh air, a new player. I think they're going to, you know, as soon as Aguero comes back, you know, it's full charge for the Premier League title, right?
Total
chaos. But I think it will be the management of that and the Premier League being competitive and the Champions League at the end of the season that will be the making or breaking of Guardiola this season, that in terms of squad rotation, but they do have quality players. Still think the back four will get tested and will get caught out a few times, because there's some players in there that are
raw.
It's how long until Kompany comes back, because I'd like to see Stones with Kompany. I think Stones is, I hope we all agree, he's going to be a great defender, but I think he does need that older head. He's got that little...
needs an older head.
Yeah, he's got that devil on his shoulder saying, yeah, you can do this, when he needs the angel saying, no. Just kick it out. Just be calm.
Had an image of Vincent Kompany with a little halo hovering up on John Stone's shoulder. How bizarre.
Photoshop if anyone wants to
do that. Yeah, exactly. We'll get the design team on it. James, it's whenever you hear Bournemouth, everyone just says, Jack Wilshere. And it's great for covering up headlines for Eddie Howe because his team haven't really played that well at all. They've had a really poor start to the season, haven't they?
They were really poor at the end of last season as well. I think they were fortunate they had enough points in the bag because their form just went off a cliff towards the end of the season. I think they're, not to shine more positive light, but I think they're going to go down with Hull this season.
How many teams can go down?
Seven in my head, seven.
You're really bringing the joy today, aren't you?
Well, we're talking about Watford Man United next. So. Get ready.
It's a good point. We are talking about Watford Man United. Dave, again, has got a face like thunder. Or depression, I'm not sure which one it is.
He's just hiding his face behind the microphone.
He's just hiding his face right behind the pop filter. Ighalo and Deeney both scoring again against West Ham. Is a real important game for Watford to win, for Mazzarri to show that, you know, for his team to show that they've got some spike. But Man United need to fix something. I mean, what's the plan?
I don't think that they will find a solution for this midfield problem. I think it is Carrick, Fellaini, Pogba. Try that. Mm-hmm. See what that's like, Mourinho. Keep experimenting. But I think with Carrick, although he's nearly retired, he's still a player that every time he plays, he looks like he's got it.
Mm. He's going to go to Everton and play 200 games for him. Come on, Carrick.
he's going to do a Barry.
He's the heir to Barry.
Do a Phil Neville to Barry.
But I think what he has in the midfield that none of the United central midfielders have in that deep position is playing that forward incisive pass.
And common sense.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing as well. And I think Fellaini was a little bit missed as well. The physicality that Fellaini brings, the attention as well. I think with Fellaini in the pit, like playing next to Pogba, you're like, which one of these guys have I got to pick up? I'm going to pick up Pogba, then Fellaini will just get more and more irritating. Mm. And then you'll have to put your attention to Fellaini if they start pinging balls there. And it opens up space for Pogba. And I think that's the thing. Some of these players need to pull the attention away. I'd like to see Zlatan in the middle, Rashford on one side, and then Martial on the side, which means no Wayne Rooney. But that's what needs to happen for Manchester United to progress. And we've been saying it for 3 years. I'll continue saying it, that it's time for Wayne Rooney to be moved on. It's time for Wayne Rooney to be moved out the side. He's not got it anymore. For me, he's a backup to Zlatan up front. He's the other number nine Mourinho has, and that's it. They've got two strikers, X amount of wingers and so forth, but they're the two players that I play up front, and I don't think other players suit that position at the moment.
Right. You are now my new favourite Man United fan.
All right.
Because everything you said about Rooney is what I've been saying for the past 3 years.
I thought he played quite well against Man City.
He was all right.
Yeah, he played all right. He played probably United's best.
Was he
players.
The best of a
don't
bad bunch?
Don't oppose the narrative, James.
Everyone's been saying about Rooney. I thought he's actually quietly been, barring that England performance, I think he's actually been okay for United this year.
Speaking of narrative, Spurs are facing Sunderland, the current Premier League whipping boys, who have no defence.
Oh, I felt so sorry from Jilabodji and Kone. But you could have got a jumbo jet through there, couldn't you?
Could have had 10 Lukaku's in the gap between them. Pochettino, obviously, Spurs really suffered in their first Champions League game at Wembley.
It was so Spurs, wasn't it?
It was really Spurs. And Pochettino, after the game, if you don't watch a lot of Pochettino interviews, he's normally so cool, so composed. In fact, he had that translator for so many years because he wanted to make sure his English was at a level where he really felt confident. And he looked absolutely rattled, James, didn't he?
He accidentally said Spurs are the best team in England, didn't he? Which I don't think he intended to say at all, really. But I think I think Kane's struggles are really having an effect on the rest of the team because Kane's not scoring or even really contributing that much at the moment. He's dropping deep. But Dele Alli against Monaco played in the two a bit deeper as well. So you've got Moussa Dembélé sat on the bench, and he's their most important player by far. He just pushes everyone up the field because everyone just knows that area's sorted in front of the back four and carrying the ball forward. Dele Alli and Dier, in theory, sounds pretty good as a midfield too, but just didn't work at all. Fabinho just absolutely monstered him.
Yeah, and Natasha, the Spurs midfield does look a bit lost without Moussa Dembélé. He is so crucial to the way they play, and he's at the cornerstone of all of their good performances, isn't he?
Yeah, I feel like Spurs missed a trick. Like, they should have been looking at strikers rather than midfielders in the summer. I mean, Kane's doing exactly what he did last season. He had a really slow start. I don't know if it's tournament hangover or that he's just not up to match fitness yet. Mm-hmm. But
slow to me.
He's never been the fastest fella.
Yeah, he looks like he's maybe lost a yard, yeah.
I don't know what it is, you know, but he did the same last season. So surely you go out there, you I mean, we'll talk about Arsenal buying strikers, but you go and buy a man that's going to score you 15 goals. I mean, they've got Janssen, who looks good, but we don't know how good he's going to be over the season.
Yeah, I mean, the goals of Heung-min Son have been helping them out in the league. I mean, they battered Stoke last weekend, but always the question against quality opposition. And Dave, Monaco were quality opposition. They've been excellent in Liga. They're unbeaten. Luis Fabiano was outstanding against Spurs. Like, really, yeah. Sorry, not Luis Fabiano. His name's just Fabiano. I'm just so obsessed with Sevilla strikers.
Yeah.
He won 7 tackles, most of any Champions League player this week. And you know, Monaco in general just completely shut down anything Spurs tried to do. Really,
first they need to do a bit of personal agenda here, promoting Liga, because it's belittled by so many pundits who don't watch it and don't, you know, should spend time watching it. And there's, they're rubbish, not good. What's happened this week? PSG absolutely dominated Arsenal. Monaco battered Spurs. They did. They beat them. They deserved to win. They were more compact than them. They played their own game, countered very well. João Moutinho was brilliant on the left. Bernardo Silva was absolutely fantastic up front. Falcao looked like his touch was back, which was incredible, because having seen him in the Premier League, he's strange. It's strange seeing him back. But in terms of that work in midfield, it's the perfect structure. Two very aggressive defensive midfielders. And Spurs' problem was getting the ball forward. I think that's why Harry Kane and Eriksen and Dele Alli, when he's playing there, and Lamella aren't doing very well, because they're not direct enough. They're missing Moussa Dembele. You know, it's something that James said early doors. That's what it is. It's that incisive forward pass. There were so many times when Spurs got into the Monaco half, be it a throw-in, be it, you know, one of the fullbacks getting it, and they kept on coming back. It was like watching what Louis van Gaal's Man United did, where it was constantly ball comes back, switch to play. If you play against a quality, organised opposition like Monaco are under Yardim, what they can do is defend. This season, they've learnt to attack. They're so compact, so structured. The bank of four will just move to the left, move to the right, move to the left, move to the right, and you won't break them down. And that's if Spurs want to take themselves to that next level, they need to be more incisive in these games where they have the ball. Because it was too flat. And obviously, he pushed Dele Alli forward, Dembele came on, helped a little bit, but then the damage had already been done. Monaco had already scored their 2 goals and they're just sitting back. You know, Lamella's another interesting one. Very, very poor in open play, but whipped in a great ball for the goal. It's that whole strength versus, you know, the weaknesses that he's giving the side. So it's maybe try Kyle Walker at right midfield. Could be an option.
And B, as Arsenal fans will attest to, if you have one philosophy, one way of playing, you get found out.
Although we've actually got about 6 central defenders now. So.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, most of them are injured, but yeah. You know, we've still got 6.
But Arsenal have got them, which is great. Let's talk a bit about Everton, who've made their best start to the league since 1910. James, coming to you on this. What has Ronald Koeman done to change from what Roberto Martinez was doing? So I think that the jury, you know, is unanimous that Roberto Martinez maybe not the sort of visionary manager we thought he is, but Koeman's turned it around pretty quickly. What's he done which has been crucial to Everton's upturn in form?
Firstly, he's got a decent goalkeeper in straight away. Tim Howard was absolutely shot last year, and so is Joe Robles. He's, again, a very substandard Premier League goalkeeper. I think that was responsible for a lot of the uncertainty at the back and on set pieces. Coleman and Baines, they've got their form back. They're not being played as like auxiliary wingers. They're actually coming from deep in their half and crossing, which has always been Baines' main skill, is crossing from 30 yards out wide. And Bolasie, they have overpaid for him. No two which ways you look at it, but he seems to have gelled already with Lukaku, and he's just so, so good at carrying the ball. It's ridiculous. He doesn't beat players for pace. So I think that helps, but he beats players just because he's so fluid. And they don't know which foot he's going to go on. Yeah. And I think on Ross Barkley as well. What is Ross Barkley's position? Like, he's not really a 10, is he? He's not really an 8 or a 6. What is his position? I think he's probably the most overrated English player we've had in the last 10 years, because we've got so bogged down and he can pass it with both feet. We've not actually looked what he's doing with it after he's passed it, but Koeman's come in and he's criticised him about 3 separate times in the media already. And he's out next summer, I think. He's going Spurs, whoever will take him. Koeman's had enough already.
See, I don't think it's going to be like that. I think Koeman's doing it because he wants to see how Barkley responds. And I think if Barkley's got something about him, then he'll listen to what's being said. He'll come in, he'll do the work, and then hopefully keep his place in the team. Because if Koeman sells him, let's be honest, the Toffee fans will be up in arms.
I don't think he's as much a fan favourite as... My brother's an Everton fan, and he's not a fan. From what I know, he's not a massive fan favourite. He's frustrating, isn't he? He's good for 3 months, and he disappears completely for six. He had an England starting spot last November, and he barely made the squad by the summer.
Seems like a long time ago, yeah. I mean, but Middlesbrough must be a bit nervous, Dave. I mean, when you looked at Everton versus Sunderland, I mean, obviously Sunderland were very, very poor, but Yannick Bolasie looked electric, and then they brought Gerard Deulofeu off the bench. I mean, it's a great option to have a direct runner who can run through the middle, you know, carry the ball, cause a bit of mischief. They've got options. It's just a case of Koeman seems to be making them gel together.
Yeah, I'm not a massive fan of Ronald Koeman as a manager.
Oh, hello. Let's talk.
I think he's Southampton especially was helped out a lot by the system that was around him. This is a test of his manager. Yeah, he's done well so far. I've got to admit that he's been impressive. Everton have looked all right. Spurs, they were very good in the first half, pretty poor in the second half. I think players like Ross Barkley, Deulofeu, a little bit too inconsistent, as we've all sort of mentioned before. But I think this Middlesbrough side is going to be a lot, you know, Karanka's got them defending. They will defend very well. This will be a different kettle of fish. This is a test for this Everton team. I think before they've played Spurs first, but obviously we all know Spurs are very slow starters. This is their real test, the first test that they've got that, you know, Koeman needs to pass, whether he plays a back three or back four. That's what I like about Koeman, is he does rotate that. That's nice. But it is, you know, can Negredo again be quite influential? Stuart Downing, who's looked quite decent so far in the Premier League. So it's going to be a test to see whether they can break those two banks of four down, because that's what Karanka's done so far. Sit deep, defend, and hit people on the break.
I think Idrissa Gueye has been phenomenal as well for Everton.
Great little player.
One of the bargains of the summer. He's very... his style is fairly similar to Kante in that he is kind of everywhere at once. His work rate is just ridiculous. He was really man of match against Sunderland. Mm. Even though Lukaku got 3 goals, he makes up for how poor Ross Barkley has been of late. And also, I think Everton are quite fortunate that Mino Raiola was so occupied with getting Paul Pogba a move that he almost just couldn't be bothered to get Lukaku a transfer. Lukaku, yeah, by all accounts, really should have left this summer. He wanted to. Had a reasonably good Euros. If he had a different super agent, he'd have probably have moved to somewhere like PSG.
Keeping him was probably their best purchase of the summer. And the fact that he's now come out and said, look, I don't want to go. I'm here for the season. Well, you know.
You've got me for another year.
For the next
year.
2 weeks, guys. I'm going to score some goals in January. He's going to come around and I'm off
but
to Barcelona.
He does look like he's given his all. Even if he does go in January, you can't say that he hasn't put his shift in on the pitch. And he looks happier. And when your striker's happy, it just makes life a bit easier. I think he's just organised them. I think it's like the whole Chris Coleman thing. Everyone knows their job. Everyone knows what they need to be doing. No one needs to be like going all maverick, basically Barkley.
They've got a grown-up in charge again. Roberto Martinez isn't a grown-up. Not in Football Manager terms, anyway.
It's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
A little bit bitchy, but a good way of putting it. And I like it. That's the line that Macca toes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a bit of European football. There's a couple of things to cover off here. Real Sociedad versus Real Madrid. Zidane could see Madrid equal Barca's 16-win La Liga record this weekend, Dave. How has Zidane managed to sort of assert such an aura of dominance upon the Real Madrid team? He looks so comfortable in every situation, doesn't he?
It's a funny one, because this Real Madrid team isn't that good.
They're not great. Tactically, they just
won the Champions League. Mm. And yeah, you can see why. The final, they sat off and Casemiro had a brilliant game. You know, they hit on the counter-attack and they played well. You know, Atletico, potentially with their squad this season, would have broken them down. But it just seems like they're not
just
ordinary,
winning.
But they're just...
They're just winning everything.
Yeah, they're stylistically, you wouldn't say they have a style. They're quite flexible, which I suppose is quite good.
Mm-hmm.
But they are just winning, and they are getting over the line. They weren't great against Sporting Lisbon midweek, but then Ronaldo comes out, and then James Rodriguez, always got to remember him, plays the cross for Morata. So they do have a lot of options, but again, they didn't do well in the transfer window. They didn't sign anyone of any quality. They went this idea that they were going to bring the youth through, which I, you know, agree with that. Like, that could work, but now they're banned for another window.
Mm.
Is that like the sort of whole Real Madrid philosophy that we're not going to get banned because we're Real Madrid, so we're not going to sign anyone, we're just going to get them next year? It's like that. I know they think they're bigger.
Bit of a risk.
But Zidane's come in and he seems to be managing everything right, and that's the thing with Real Madrid. It's not just managing the players, it's managing the president, managing all the fans. There's a lot of expectation there. So yeah, fair play to Zidane. He's got it all working well. Bale looks very good this season so far. I'd probably go with Morata over Benzema as well, but...
Interesting opinion. I mean, James, it's worth mentioning, it was a bit of a gamble for Perez to sort of put Zidane in the hot seat, because he's the only manager pretty much in the world, only person in the world that is more popular than Perez amongst the Real Madrid fans. And it's basically, you know, it's a game of egos at Real Madrid. It's a game of Galacticos. That's what Perez has made it. And he's named the ultimate Galactico as the manager. And he's just come in and just been like, yep, I'm in charge. No egos here. Bale and Cristiano, don't fight because I'm better than both of you. And
I'll headbutt you.
Yeah, or I'll headbutt you right in the chest. And it's just, everything just seems so smooth and easy for them. They don't seem to be any hiccups whatsoever.
Well, ironically, it's taken a former Galactico to kind of end their policy of signing Galacticos, hasn't it? So, I mean, he's done a quietly good job. I think we're all like looking for issues with Real Madrid because it's pretty serene by their club standards. It's just turning up, winning 2-0 and going home. there's no real drama in that. So Ronaldo got one and then Bale got the other. See you Wednesday.
It's Ancelotti-esque, isn't it?
Yeah, so, it's almost, if it had been a different man in charge, there'd be cries of, oh, we need a more entertaining manager, but you've got probably the greatest attacking midfielder of the last 20 years in charge, so everyone's going, oh, well, the style's going to kick in eventually.
Yeah.
But maybe this is just it. But you look at their 11, where are you really, like, who were they going to bring in to better someone in their 11? Like, they've got Kroos and Modric, who are probably, for my money, the two best passers in world football playing in centre midfield. So long passes anyway, and they've got a system which suits expansive direct football. So at fullback they look pretty good in goal, and centre half they're pretty good. They didn't really need tinkering with, and I think it's very, very good of Zidane that he's recognised that they don't need much doing to them. That hasn't happened at Real Madrid for donkeys since Del Bosque, I think.
Let's talk about Serie A, Natasha. A very, very direct question: can anybody stop Juventus? It's Inter Milan versus Juventus this weekend.
Inter could be like a wounded animal after their result in the Europa League, losing 2-0. But I don't know, it's really disappointing sometimes with some of the leagues abroad because, okay, I don't believe Premier League's the best league in the world, but I do think it's the most entertaining. And I think you look at Italy and you think, okay, Juve are going to win it again. Past 4 years, they've won the title. And can anyone stop them? Probably not.
They've won the past three Serie A titles by a combined 43 points.
Shout out
to Dustin Hoffman, the main man out here. James, it's really symptomatic, isn't it? It just does stink of a one-team league. I mean, even Andrea Pirlo said it during an interview last week. It's rapidly becoming a case of, right, Juve are probably going to drop points 4 or 5 times this season, and the rest of the league just has to feed on the scraps.
Yeah, it's like PSG in France.
Yeah.
I mean, Juve are going to win it again, clearly, aren't they? I mean, it takes a lot for Roma to maintain that over a period. They're probably their biggest rivals. Napoli are pretty good under Sarri as well. But Inter Milan are just a rich shambles, aren't they? And, I mean, I think what's interesting is there's rumours that Diego Simeone reduced his contract down 2 years, which is a pretty unheard of step. He said before he wants to manage all the clubs that he's played for. Probably doesn't mean Lazio because they've got no money. So it probably looks like maybe in 2018, Diego Simeone will be Inter Milan manager. It's worth remembering they are very, very rich. They bought João Mário, Gabriel Barbosa this summer, two very exciting players. So they have potential. They're not there by any means yet. They did very similar under Mancini last summer. They spent a lot of money in the summer and looked like formidable earlier on, and then it all just fell apart. But Frank de Boer's got a big job in his hands. They've conceded the first goal in all four of their games under de Boer so far. So if you keep committing defensive calamities week in, week out, that kind of sets the tone, doesn't it?
Well, that's all we have time for, and you're going to be left with the image of potentially Diego Simeone managing Jeffrey Condogbia, which is, I think, something we'd all love to enjoy.
And Gary Medel.
Cool.
Oh, I'd love to see him backtrack Simeone.
That'd be incredible, wouldn't it? Thanks very much for listening. Thanks to our guests, Squawker Dave, James McManus, and Natasha Henry. Please subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter. And keep an eye out for more Squawker Talker action very, very soon.